stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Hi, this is Nathaniel Metcalf. You can catch me on FUBAR Radio's Nick and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on Fridays at midday. I want you all guys to not leave the house, much like I'm not doing. You're listening to Stay Home and Chill on FUBAR Radio, keeping you company through the coronavirus.
Filmish with Sean Walsh and Mark Simmons on FUBAR Radio.
We are very honoured, privileged, to have with us Michelle Hazanavicius. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
We also have a section of the show which we normally ask our guest before we go on to the films that you love, actually. Ryan or Ryan? This is the section where we ask our guest, if you had to sleep with Ryan Reynolds or Ryan Gosling, which one would it be?
Both.
That's the most French thing that anyone's ever said.
I mean, both like of course. Handsome there.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah,
right.
Okay, let's go with the two of them.
Excellent. So what films do you love, actually?
Well, there's billions of films that I love, actually.
Yeah.
And I think the movie 50 First Dates.
And they had a song, the rom-com.
Yeah, exactly.
This one
with Drew Barrymore.
Yes.
And I watched this movie like dozens of times. And I have four kids.
That's brilliant.
I mean, is that because you keep forgetting what happens?
That's why I'm very relaxed with the Ryan or Ryan thing. I have four kids. So they all have seen this movie like maybe six times, each of them. So now when I put the DVD of 50 First Dates, the elder daughters are like, Again,
so refreshing to hear an Oscar winner say, I watch Adam Sandler movies.
I mean, I can't watch like Falstaff, Orson Welles movie like dozen and dozen of times. I know it's brilliant, but I'm a family man.
That's really touching. I really believe you as well.
Oh, you have to. I mean, if I would have lied, I wouldn't have picked this one.
Yes, that's true. Yeah. Have you got any others? Normally we do three. If you don't have three, don't worry.
Oh, there's another one, The Way We Were, the Sidney Pollack movie.
I feel like I've seen
Barbara Streisand.
Yeah, Barbara Streisand with like the lovely song of the soundtrack. It's a movie we watch a lot with my wife, and we cry like trying to hide from the other one. And, you know, it's a little bit cheesy, but as you said, it's a guilty pleasure.
Do you like any Hugh Grant films?
Yes, and actually,
Get in.
Yes, of course. I love him. He's brilliant. I don't know if he's brilliant as an actor exactly, but he's brilliant as Hugh Grant.
Did you see him in Paddington Bear?
Of course. I mean, the movie, both of them, the first one and the second one, they are excellent. Yeah, and he's brilliant.
Michelle, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Michelle Hazanavicius. I got it. I smashed it.
You really did. That was really fun.
Ian Boltzmann on FUBAR Radio.
We're joined now by Sebastian. Now, here's the thing.
Yes.
There's an accent on your name, but it's not on the screen.
Sorry.
So is it Roche?
It's Sebastian Roche.
And George, I want to say Blergden.
George Blergden.
Is that right? Blergden.
Blergden, yeah.
Because you both come in a strapping man.
Very strapping.
Like the third musketeer's missing.
No, yeah, it's true.
Or it could be me.
I'm D'Artagnan.
Well, hang on.
I don't know the names of the others.
Wait, Aramis, Athos and Porthos. My God.
We're not picking rooms in a hotel.
You're right.
You can't just say, I'm D'Artagnan. I'm having that. We will decide amongst ourselves.
No, I just decided.
Who's D'Artagnan? You know. Okay. And I've decided that I am D'Artagnan.
Okay,
that's what I've decided. Gene, tell me, you're both that famous?
You are both a star, obviously, in Supernatural, among other.
I was in The Vampire Diaries and The Originals, you know, very successful shows that reach a large audience, which is wonderful, actually. And George was in Vikings, of course, which reached a large audience.
We did have someone in Vikings.
Travis Fimmel?
Not Travis. If you said the name, Clive Standen, that's it.
Clive.
Now, I did that thing which I would condemn someone else for doing. I was basically standing under the aircon. I was too hot anyway.
Yeah.
And Nat said, they're really well known. You'll know them when you see them. I went, well, not necessarily, because I don't really watch them.
I think you might have watched something, because reading now, I was like, you were in The Young Pope. I watched that. Good show.
The Man in the High Castle. I'm listing.
Watch it. It's coming out. I did that horrible thing, and I was absolutely in the wrong. I was totally in the wrong, and even you pulled me on it at the time, and I was like, I'm going to are still arguing, but
I know, but it's fine.
But she's right. No, because I said, well, I've not heard of them.
And like, I said, just because you haven't doesn't mean that millions of people.
But I'd go more about that. My dad, that's something my dad would say. I'd go, what fucking works? She's really the arbiter of fucking what's
they're right, so I was like, I'm not having that.
I should apologise to
you. I don't think you should apologise. Mm-hmm. I mean, I was having a conversation with someone about this recently, about the Hollywood actor and star, and I think the days of kind of celebrity for actors, like young actors now who are graduating drama school, will never ever be a Brad Pitt or a Tom Cruise or a George Clooney,
which is probably good, isn't it?
Which is great, because you're never defined by a role and you're never defined by yourself. There are a few actors who I can think of, you know, maybe 10 actors in the US who you go and watch a film because they're in it, regardless of the name of the film, regardless of the poster.
But it is a dying trend.
You know, you go and watch a Tom Hanks film because Tom Hanks is in that movie. You don't care what the movie's about.
I think also it's due to social media. There is so much publicity. You know, these are people who still have a sort of private life. You know, Brad Pitt doesn't really do social media. Yeah. All these sort of stars, movie stars, it's like George Clooney. I mean, of course, we see him, you know, he's in everyday life in every sort of gossip magazine, but they have this sort of cachet that I don't think we're going to have anymore, because, you know, we're all on social media, we're all, you know, selfieing, we're doing Instagram, etc. I mean, the mystique goes away, but, you know.
Yeah. It's like every time I turn on Netflix at the moment, I mean, every day there is a new series. Yeah. I mean,
There's so much content, alarmingly so as well.
Honestly, it's not shit. It's like high production values, and you're like, actually, we have to look at when they're making one there. There's that many of them.
But you know what's great also is I watch Finnish series, German, Swedish, Danish, French, Azerbaijani, I don't know if there's one, but you know, but it's content from all over the world. This great Azerbaijani series. I love it.
In your boasting, you just started making stuff up. And I watch one from that. I don't even know if there is one, but I have watched it.
No, what I'm saying is there's so much content from all over the world that's quality, that is of great quality.
Yeah. I would always encourage people, if they go like buying Blu-rays or whatever, if people still do that, go to the World Cinema bit.
Yes.
And I promise you, you will find something that you've never heard of that you go, that sounds brilliant and I want to watch that.
Yeah. That's what I do when I go to iTunes. When I travel on my iPad, I'll go to foreign cinema.
You travel on your iPad?
Well, when I travel with my iPad.
Your iPad fly?
He flies.
Wow.
I'm at the height of technology, guys.
You've got the Star Trek app.
You
put it on the floor and stand on it.
Yeah. You speak like six languages, though, don't you? Like, when you watch foreign stuff, do you watch it with subtitles? Because, I mean, if I watched anything in other than English, I would have to be doing
more. There is stuff that I understand more. I mean, I do speak, you know. I do speak all the languages of love. I speak French, I speak Italian, and Spanish.
And you do a brilliant Borat. Well done. genuinely, thank you for coming in. It's been a pleasure. It's been engaged, hasn't it? So it's been nice.
Thank you very much. It was wonderful.
Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
I am very excited now to be joined by Julian Lindsay, a.k.a. Deep Valley.
Hey.
And can I say, and I've never said this in an interview before, so I think it's quite corny, but it definitely applies, you guys rock. You basically just really rocked festival out there. It was amazing.
We did our job then.
Yeah, you really did your job. How did you find it?
Amazing.
Was it good for you?
Yeah, are you kidding?
There were so many people.
Yeah, I mean, you can't really complain, you know, playing main stage at the Queens of the Stone Age and Friends Festival.
When you get asked to do something like this, how much does that play a factor into it? Who is high up on the bill? Who's inviting you along? Or do you just kind of, you're quite cynical and go, we'll do it for the money? Or do you feel with Queens of the Stone Age, Iggy Pop, you're like, yeah, definitely got to do it?
This was basically the anchoring performance for the whole tour we then planned.
Right, okay.
Yeah, this was like, we weren't even planning to tour per se, and we got this offer and we were just so excited. Oh yeah, we're going to that.
Basically, anytime Queens asks us to play with them, we're like, yeah.
Okay. Has that happened before?
This is our third show we've played with them.
Nice, okay. Are you on like friendly terms with them, or is it like a business?
Yeah, totally friendly terms. It's a business thing. We like to do paperwork together.
Nice. Do your tax return.
Yeah, we do our taxes together.
Yeah, yeah. You guys are clearly very, very brilliantly dressed, both on and off stage.
Likewise.
Well, and you've got the glitter going on. How can I zhuzh this up a bit more?
I don't think you can zhuzh that up any more than it's already zhuzhed up.
I think I need some killer shades. Zhuzhed.
Maybe if the explosions on the cars were sequins.
Like on your boots?
Yeah.
I've got some glitter in our dressing room if you want to come by.
Yeah, I'm coming straight after. Yeah. I'll be in there.
Maybe a little rouge.
I want to talk to you about your recent single, Bring It On. It just came out. Such a really, like, great, as all of your stuff, great killer kind of, like, hook to it. Is that where you start? Do you start with these kind of like really great guitar riffs and then work backwards, or how do you construct a song?
We often do. We often start with a riff. It can work all different ways.
Yeah, it's just, it really just depends.
Do you guys have a secret of how you write that kind of, because a lot of bands just can't do it and you do it like sort of all the time.
For me, riffs are like the easiest thing. So
what's the hardest?
God, I don't know. Classical music or something?
Really good riff is like a brontosaurus throwing its head in the water to drink in slow motion. You know, it's like, but you know?
Big splash.
Yeah. Elegant and graceful, but huge and heavy. Suspenseful.
Sometimes we get into a room and just like start jamming. And when we do that, it's just easier for me to write riffs on the spot because I can hear the note better than if I'm playing chords. When you're in a rehearsal space, it's loud. Sometimes I can't, like, hear the chords as well. So I don't know. Just riffs are just easy for me.
So you guys originally came from California, and obviously there's quite a weight of expectation of being quite cool coming out of that part of the world, which you guys obviously managed with flying colours. So. Do you feel the kind of pressure to be sort of, like, really kick-ass? Do you ever think about it? Like, clearly, it looks like the way that you've kind of present yourself on stage is quite effortless, but you must know what you want to do and don't want to do.
We're, like, the weird unicorns of rock, because like rock is traditionally like a lot of like black, but we're like weird, you know, like that. We're like rainbow rockers,
and also quite a male dominated genre, which means you're also beacon for cool females. And do you feel the pressure of that, or do you not really care?
When we perform, we really want to blow people's minds.
Yeah,
we want to smash their faces, we want to melt their brains, we want to do all those things that you want to do with rock, you know, with like, I always say, like, the sincere expression of this. It's not pressure, it's like we feel really motivated to throw heavily down.
Yeah, yeah.
Feels good to do that. And for some reason, for Lindsay and I, that's something that comes naturally to both of us randomly. And that's like what brings us together, you know?
Right.
We're not your manic pixie dream girls.
No, and you don't come across as pixie dream girls, which is good.
We're just like depressive elephant nightmares.
Isn't everybody behind the camera? Speaking of which, to kind of transcend you from these sage goddesses to depressed nightmares, we're going to do some generic festival questions.
Great, let's do it.
So, here we go. And these questions are mainly like if you was to go for fun, not if you was working. If you're at a festival, would you watch the headliner, or would you rather be off in some cool little hideaway bar in the forest somewhere?
I mean, I would watch the headliner.
You watch the headliner?
Yeah, if the headliner was Nine Inch Nails, I would watch.
Right. And if it's anyone else, you're not. But it's kind of already pretty much nailed on by your visages, but glitter, face paint, or fancy dress? If you've got to choose one, what are you going to...
Glitter.
By fancy dress, you mean costumes?
Yeah.
I've developed an allergy to glitter, sadly, so I'll have to go with fancy dress on that one.
Okay, great. Cider or beer?
Beer.
If you're in the crowd, would you be one of these kind of guys that has a big flag? Would you do crowd surfing, or would you get on someone's shoulders?
Crowd surfing.
I recommend the shoulders.
I mean, I would do that as well. That would be next up.
Are you going to watch the sort of crusty old legend that's performing, or the bright young talent? By the way, I'm definitely not talking about Iggy Pop, because I do realise where we are.
Crusty old legend?
You know, like when they wheel out Lionel Richie or something on a Sunday at a festival. Are you going to watch that, or are you going to go and watch the bright new shining light?
I mean, in all likelihood, probably the crusty old legend.
All right. None of these answers are wrong. It's just so that the people at home know what you would do if you were in their position.
Because you could probably, like, later in the week go see the upcoming talent for, like, a deal.
Yeah.
And it would be really expensive to see the crusty old legend. So you need to be, like, economical about that choice.
Prudent. Yeah. Back to doing your taxes with Queens of the Stone Age again. And finally, it's the day after the first big night at the festival. Are you going to have, like, a health kick smoothie, or are you going to get straight back on the booze?
Health kick smoothie.
Very sensible. Drink
wake
responsibly.
And bake.
What's that?
You wake and then you bake.
Okay. The devil's cigarettes. Guys, it's been such a pleasure to talk to you. Are you sticking around to watch the rest of the show?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great. Well, enjoy it. I'm coming to get some glitter.
Great. And welcome.
If you
come
see
on
me
over.
Doing an interview with glitter on, you know where it came from. Deep Valley, thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Michael Payton on FUBAR Radio.
Eddie Temple Morris and Nick Hawkes. Firstly, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yay. Thanks for having me.
It's nice to put the face to the tunes, because of course, you know, I was on XFM for 15 years. I've played your tunes on there, Michael.
It's very, very strange to actually meet someone who was heavily supportive. So thanks so much for that.
From the heart. You know, I enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
I loved your stuff.
Both of you are legends in your own right. Nick, the founder of XL. Obviously, Richard Russell is the kind of name that everyone associates with XL. Was it co-founding it, or was it you founded it and then he kind of sort of took it over and then ran with it?
Yeah, so basically, Rich wasn't there at the start, so I pitched
the idea, a guy called Tim Palmer, whose right. name doesn't crop up so often in the sort of historical reporting, but XL grew out of a label called City Beat. So I used to work for Tim on the City Beat label, and it was kind of a cross-genre sort of label, some rap, some soul stuff, some kind of more commercially dancey bits. And then I pitched to Tim, I said, hey, we should be starting something that is more focused on the underground, that taps into this burgeoning underground culture, and we should be trying to sign great records, but not worrying about having hits. Because on City Beat, we were kind of looking to sign things like, thinking always, will Radio 1 play this? And having those kind of questions. But my view was, we need to be signing great records, not worrying about, you know, whether this stuff's going to end up on daytime radio, but just do great music. And then that started, and yeah, Rich came along later, and I left, and then Rich ended up running the show. Very, very successfully.
I've been excited about talking to you, gents, since like last week, just because of the reputation that XL Records has. But sort of moving on to yourself, Eddie, legendary DJ, obviously, 15 years, like you said, on XFM, one of the founders of Secret Garden Party.
That's right, yeah.
What moment of madness kind of birthed Secret Garden Party? That's my main question.
Well, Secret Garden Party, well, that was an amazing guy called Freddie Fellows, just turned up. He got in contact with me through XFM and said, I really want to talk to you about a potential festival, a party that I want to do. And he just, you know, he seemed to be like a nice guy. So I said, come to my flat and let's have a meeting. Turned up with a Mac and a spliff, which I thought was a really nice way to break the ice of a meeting.
It's a peace pipe, isn't it?
Yeah, we went to the canal by Kensal Road, Portobello Way, and he showed me all these amazing pictures of this party that he put on. It was his birthday party, and there was this big fire and a sofa and a doorway and all these beautiful people going dancing. And he said, look, I've got a license and I want to make this party into a thing, you know, into, I mean, kind of like a festival, but it's not a festival, it's just going to be a party. And I love that idea, and not for profit. I just want to do the best rave ever. And I just thought, he's such a lovely guy. I said, why me? And he said, well, because you play anything. I love your show because you'll play like techno, you play house, you play hip hop, you play like, well, dubstep wasn't a thing then, but drum and bass or whatever. Or you play a reggae tune in the summer. And I like the way that you'll just play anything. So you perfectly encapsulate what our spirit is.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think you're quite into break beats and stuff. I was playing quite a lot of break beats at that time. I said, yeah, okay. He said, you know, he said, I haven't got much money. I said, it's okay, I'm not about the money. Oh, he said, Groove Armada are headlining. And then a month before the party, he called me ashen-faced, I'm guessing, saying Groove Armada have pulled out. They've been offered a corporate gig that's paying them twice as much as I've offered, and they've pulled. And I said, well, that's interesting, because I got offered a corporate gig that was paying three times as much as what you're offering, but I turned them down. But they went where the money was, and lots of people do that, you know.
Have they started Lovebox at this time?
No, I think this is pre-Lovebox. This is definitely pre-Lovebox.
They might have been the proceeds that they might have spent that money that they made at that corporate gig starting Lovebox. You know, they were just investing.
But they're good guys, Groove Armada. I wouldn't. This is not a slagging.
I genuinely think there is a clear cut line between. I respect people that do things for the money. I think if that's you, that's you. That's your business.
And it might have been. They might not have even known about it. It might have been an agent or a management. Cool. Thing
this is true.
Got a quick Groove Armada anecdote if you want to hear it.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it.
We were trying to sign them to Positiva.
Okay.
And I don't know whether other labels do this too much, but we're like, look, while we're in that process of trying to sign, it's like, any way that we can help you guys develop, what have you. And they're like, oh, we've got this At The River record. I'm like, let us clear the sample for you. Maybe we can do that. So we actually cleared the sample on At The River. Unfortunately, still didn't get them.
Wow.
You know, we were just working it to see if we could reel them in to Positiva, which I was running at the time. And unfortunately, it didn't work. When I was at uni, I figured that there were two routes for me to go down. Funnily enough, either radio or the kind of records route. And I did a communications degree at uni here in London. And then I think what happened was that my first full-time job was in the record side of things as a promotion person, kind of mailing out records to club DJs and doing a little bit of radio plugging. But it was that side, so that kind of set me off down the records route, where maybe if when I'd come out of uni, if my first job was as a junior production assistant at Capital or something, maybe I would have gone down the radio route. But really, my radio experience, it's pretty limited. I used to help out on Radio 1 when I was at uni. I blagged myself a gig working at WBLS in New York for the summer when I was at uni also. That was pretty good. I blagged my way in, so I was wondering how I can get involved in radio or records whilst I'm working in New York. I had a work permit for the summer and I got a job as a cinema usher in the evenings. And then I thought, yeah, how do I get involved in something else? And I came up with a plan. I'll just call up WBLS and I'll phone up and see if I can interview the head of the radio station. And I'll say that I'm a journalist, I'm writing an article on radio and give it a go. Mm. So I phoned up, explained this to the head of the station's assistant, who said, okay, I'll speak to Mr. Kirkland, and if he's interested, I'll call you back. 10 minutes later, she calls back, yes, he'd be delighted to be interviewed by you. Do you want to come in tomorrow morning? I was like, oh my God, yes, please, but God, Jesus, I didn't expect it to work.
Yeah.
So I was like, I've got to make up some questions, I don't know what, and I'm fiddling around, listening to all these radio stations, trying to work out what the hell I'm doing. So I went in, did the interview, and then I was in the afternoon. I met the lady who ran the programming area, so that's like filing away the records and compiling the charts. She said, yeah, if you want to kind of do some stuff, help out, whatever, this afternoon. Oh, great, which I did. And then at the end of the day, she said, so, do you want to come back, you know, 10 o'clock tomorrow morning? And I'm like, well, I can do, like, if you want. She's like, yeah, sure, you should. You're our new intern, if you want to be.
You fucked around and got a job. And she-
yeah. I got offered a job, and I didn't even realise. I didn't even realise kind of that I was doing almost the interview process, yeah, but yeah. I didn't even know. So I was like, really? Okay. But this isn't the pivotal thing. The pivotal thing comes 3 weeks later, where there's a world premiere playback party for a new Michael Jackson album, and the radio plugger from Epic comes in with a handful of invites into the programming area and goes like, okay, new Jackson record's coming, who wants to come along and hear the record for the first time in the world? And I'm sitting there in the corner and I'm kind of very shyly going, what do I do here? Well, I sort of gently started raising my hand going, yeah, I'm kind of, I don't know whether I should be doing this, but I'll give it a go. He's like, yeah, you're a good kid, you can come. Hands me the invite, and then I go to this party. It's a massive super yacht, it's going round Manhattan, there's champagne, there's caviar, and I'm speaking to the BLS people. I'm like, who are all these people on the boat? They're like, oh, that guy is the editor of Billboard, and this is the guy who runs Tower Records. And at that point, I was in between my second and third year at uni, and I'm like, and me? What on earth am I doing here? This is ridiculous. So, and I literally said that to myself, but then I could work out how I got there, because of course I was there because I was working in the programming department of BLS, and the guy came in. But then how was I there? Oh, it was because I phoned up to do the interview. So I could kind of work out the steps that it took to get me to that position. And I thought to myself, well, it's ridiculous that I'm here, but that was how it happened. And at that point, I was thinking, you know, I'd like to have a career in music. I wonder if it might be possible to sign a hit ever or get a job at a record label. I don't know. Maybe these are far-fetched ideas. But then again, it's pretty fucking far-fetched that I'm standing on this super yacht with a plate of caviar and champagne and all that. So I actually thought, well, maybe it's possible.
And then years later, you signed the greatest producer of electronic music in the UK ever.
So, you know, it's funny.
Fair play, man. Ian Boltzmann on FUBAR Radio.
I'm going to speak to Phil Gibbs on line one. Come back to that email.
Yeah.
I'm in such a bad mood, dude.
Why? What's happened?
I don't know, I just am. I'm in a shitty mood. My windscreen got smashed last night, which just pissed me off. And then we've just had some emails into the show, and someone was saying, oh, do it in America, it'd be better. Would you be able to do all this interview in an American accent?
I can do what I can. I'll have a go. Are you doing yours?
Have I got to be American as well, Nat?
No, you're okay not to be American. Just the guests have to be
American. Oh, no, there we go. Sorry, Phil. It's got to be just the guests who are American.
What? I have to be an American guest?
Look, this isn't my feedback, right, okay. Mate. It's not my feedback.
Which
right.
part of America?
Boston.
Ideally Boston.
Boston. Okay, yeah, good. Okay. I can do that.
Here we go. So, welcome back to the show. We've got a brilliant guest today. The American comedian Phil Jupiter joins online. You there, Phil?
Yeah, hey, how are you doing there?
Yeah, I'm all right, yeah, I'm good, Phil. How are you getting on? How's America today?
Well, it's, spring training started in them Red Sox, whoa!
Is that the football team in America, or the baseball?
No, hey,
this isn't going to work, is it?
This is not going to work on any level. Continue this at any... What kind of listeners are that specific that they...
American ones!
They're ringing, what, yeah. The Americans... Not only want you to do the show over there, but in their accent.
Yeah, that's absolutely.
Remarkably.
Ludicrous.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's Fan Club on FUBAR Radio.
We're about to have Dana Ashbrook, Bobby Briggs on Twin Peaks. Twin Peaks has been a part of your life now for over 25 years.
Oh, yeah.
Does it follow you around? It must be a proud association, though, to have kept it going for so long.
Yeah, it was a huge shock that it came back after 25 years. It's been a real sort of a pillar in my career, at least something that people like. It's rare that I do stuff that people like.
So it was a big shock then when it came back last year?
I mean, maybe in the earlier years, right after the first thing, but after a while, it just kind of, you know, went away, and I always just went off of what David Lynch said, which was, you know, it's deader than a doornail, I think is what he said.
Oh, wow.
So I just thought it was, you know, kind of a thing that we put to bed, but I guess people had other plans.
If I take you back then to 1989, so when you got that first pilot script for Twin Peaks, at the time, did you think of it as being something that was completely new and original? Was that obvious right from the get-go?
Yeah, man. It was called The Northwest Passage at that time, and the casting director, friend of mine that had tried to cast me in another show that she'd done, so I'd been in her office many times, and her son is the guy that plays Leo. His name's Eric DeRay. That was the casting director, Joanna Ray's son, yeah. So he used to actually be in the office and run the sessions when we would go in for auditions. And so, you know, when I went in to go meet on this show called Northwest Passage, I got into the office and I talked to Eric about it, and we were just talking about the script and how it was, the woman with the patch and the silent drape runners and all the stuff. You know, we were laughing about that, and we thought it was amazing, you know. I'd never seen anything like it. But I was so green. I was a new, young actor at that time, so I didn't really have any experience with anything. So I kind of lucked into it.
Wow. And were you aware yourself of David Lynch at the time and the movies he'd made?
Only Elephant Man, actually, was the movie that I knew that he directed, because my mother was also an actress in where I'm from, in San Diego. She was like a sort of a local theater actress, and she did a production of The Elephant Man. She played the actress in it. And so I knew the play really well. So when the movie came out, you know, we all went to see it because it was such an important thing in our lives, and it just happened to be David Lynch that directed it. That was my only knowledge of David Lynch at that time. I didn't know any of Eraserhead or Blue Velvet or any of the shorts or any of that stuff.
When you got the call to come back that it was going to return, was there any doubt in your mind that you'd do it?
No. I would have done anything. I would have done a walk by with a wave. I didn't care. I just wanted to see these people again, you know? So it was no hesitation whatsoever. I was just glad that they were doing it the way they were doing it, you know, that it was continuation and not like trying to rehash
or something. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it really feels to me like Twin Peaks is one of those shows that's really kind of redefined what modern television is now, right? It doesn't feel like you'd have things like The Sopranos or Mad Men or those kind of shows without Twin Peaks, right? It really does feel like, and especially for a show that would have been like a network TV show, it really did change everything, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, if you look at what was out there the same year that Twin Peaks first came out, you know, the shows all looked the same as they always did. You know, every room is lit to the hilt. You can see every corner. There's just absolutely nothing cinematic about the way they used to shoot it. They used to shoot it 5 to 6 days, a whole episode, and just rip through television. There was no real cinematic quality to it. And I think when David came out with Twin Peaks, it was like you got to see TV as more of a cinematic sort of thing, and a higher quality on every level, music, lighting, production design, all that stuff. Was just, the level went up. Quite frankly, it became more difficult to do good television because they used to just pound it out. And then after Twin Peaks, you know, everyone sort of took a little more care and realized that you could do it a little bit better.
It ups the game, doesn't it? Because everyone, and it's quality, there's sort of like a quality to it that I think people assumed you didn't need or people might not enjoy. But it really does feel like a lot of the Twin Peaks episodes really are like mini movies, aren't they? They're just like an hour long movie. It feels like a really sort of almost cinematic experience.
Exactly. And they're just so beautiful to watch. Everything technically is pretty interesting. The sound design, all that stuff is above and beyond what normal television does in the early days. Now, as Michael Horace would say, the Twin Peaks' DNA is all over the shows that are out today.
Absolutely.
And David Chase, the guy that created The Sopranos, you know, talks about how Twin Peaks inspired him for a lot of stuff on The Sopranos, and especially the dream sequence stuff that Tony Soprano had in The Sopranos. He talked about it in interviews and stuff like that. So, you know, that's flattering. I mean, I really didn't have anything to do with that because it's all David Lynch, but just flattering to be a part of something that...
And it does feel like that to you. That's nice that it feels like that to you as well, right? That you feel like you're part of some sort of big phenomenon.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm a small cog in a very giant machine, but, you know, I feel lucky to be involved. You know, really, my goal on the new one was when I got it and I saw the way they made my character grow and change. I just wanted to make sure I didn't mess it up. I don't want to fuck it up.
I think Bobby Briggs is the character that probably changes most from in between series as well, right? Almost even the way you act and everything about it, he really has, like, grown up, right?
I mean, yeah. There's a scene in the second series where my dad tells me about a dream he had, and it sort of explains that Bobby's going to turn out okay. And
yeah,
nothing ever really came of that other than it just being a really cool scene. And then it sort of was proved out in the third series where you got to kind of see how Bobby ended up. Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's it. He does change even.
Really fun.
He does change even over the course of that first couple of series, though, doesn't he? You kind of do get the impression there's a lot more to him than you first get. And I guess he almost starts off as slightly more sort of a two-dimensional kind of bad kid, and then you kind of get the idea of what he's about.
Yeah, man. I mean, that's all the writing. That's all those guys. I just try to do what they put on the page. You know, we got really lucky with Twin Peaks. We were good writers, and, you know, David and Mark and then all the people that wrote the series. We just were really lucky. You know, we're lucky to have those people. So they wrote cool stuff for me to do. Literally, I wish I was as cool as that. You know?
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
We have our guest on the phone, the absolutely gorgeous Karen Hauer. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm really well. How are you?
Good. Thanks so much for speaking to us. It must be kicking off busy time. Strictly is back now, officially.
Yes, it is. I've actually been in the professional rehearsals now.
Right.
So it's been a pretty intense 2 weeks already.
I bet. So explain to those that don't know what happens in these early stages.
Well, so for the first 4 weeks, we started only with the pros. The rehearsal was only with the pros.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting ready all of our professional numbers. Yeah, and then at the end of the month, we meet the celebrities.
I think probably what I imagine one of the biggest problems would be if you just didn't particularly gel with someone, like that you've been partnered with. Has that ever been a problem for you?
Personally, no. Actually, I'm still friends with all of my partners,
mm-hmm.
and I love them all. I think they've been great and a great part of my journey on Strictly.
Yeah.
I've seen before when people don't get along, but at the same time, it's one of those things that you have to blend with one another no matter what. At the end of the day, it's about the happiness and the fun behind it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it would be a real shame if you don't get along. I mean, if you're coming on Strictly, you're coming on Strictly because it's such a loved show.
Yeah, yeah.
So, if you get the wrong professional, the good thing is that all the professionals are fun and they're at the top of their game.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? I think everybody's friendly, everybody's cool.
But it hasn't always been like that, Strictly, right? There's been rumors before about stuff backstage, about a bit of awkwardness and stuff. Is that not the case anymore?
Not for the past 8 years I've been there, and there hasn't been anything that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're always so focused on taking care of your celebrity and making sure that they're okay, that whatever else is going around you is, you know, you probably hear things here and there, but I've never seen anything or
just
anybody
not
even long. But yeah, you just get on with it. And again, at the end of the day, it's about making that Saturday night show the best. And it's always the best. It's always fun, and it's what people wait for.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
It's such good TV.
It's
Strictly
time, yeah.
100%.
And it leads up to Christmas. I mean,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
The best thing.
That's the thing, like, for people watching it, it's like, well, Christmas is right around the corner, isn't it?
Because yeah, I know. And then it's some time off for us, because I haven't had time off in about 7 years.
Oh, God. There was a story going around about how the decision to get Motsy as the new head judge has caused some friction because, of obviously, she's OT's sister. What have you made of the whole thing?
No, listen, I think she's absolutely fantastic and a great addition to Strictly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was head judge on the German show, and
yeah,
she judged OT there. So it's, you know, it's never been a problem for any of us, and it's not going to be a problem at all. I think it's going to be absolutely amazing. I mean, we're going to miss Darcy.
Of course.
Darcy is, you know, she's a gem, a beauty for us. And she actually joined when I joined the show.
Oh, is it the same year?
It was the same year that I joined the show. And I think Motsy's going to be awesome. She's a great dancer, a great judge, and she's going to kick butt.
I wonder if actually, because people will be watching her so closely to make sure she doesn't overmark OT or anything, that she'll probably be like,
you know what,
on the other direction.
I think everybody's going to be watching everybody. You know what? Their eyes are going to be on all the collabs and how, what if you're going to step on the wrong foot or not. But it's such a beautiful show, and there's so much attention on the show.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, the eyes are always going to be on the celebrities, and yes, they're going to be on Motsi, but I think she knows what she's doing. She's a veteran. She knows exactly what she's going to be watching and what she's going to be scoring. And, you know, but at the end of the day, we're going to be, all the professionals are going to be working hard to make sure that all the celebrities are just on top of their game.
What's the hardest thing about doing Strictly?
You don't sleep.
You're absolutely exhausted.
And literally, like, you dance, I'm dancing. It's like murder on the dance floor.
Literally.
It's hard. It's just a job that's just, like, full on. You know, you don't have time to stop. And that's the sad thing sometimes, that you spend so much time, like, you know, creating and stuff, that you forget to enjoy it. And
yeah,
just live,
I bet,
in the moment.
And you just move on to the next thing and the next thing.
Yeah. Exactly. So, I mean, I guess one of the things that I need to do this year, even more than any other year, is just stop for a moment and go, wow, I'm lucky to be
doing
this job and to be on the most amazing show with a great team around me.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that I would tell all the celebrities that are going to be doing it, that don't worry about looking, you know, like, oh my God, I don't know what I'm doing. Do I look stupid? No, you don't look stupid. It's okay. We all look stupid.
Yeah. Just relax. No,
yeah, you just have to relax and literally enjoy, because it's a one in a lifetime opportunity.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And they're going to absolutely love it.
You do one of the things that I think most people as well would find a struggle, and you work with your ex. How do you kind of negotiate that? Is it all right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Kevin and I have worked together for the past 8 years, and we absolutely love working together. Rehearsal started last week, and it was like, we're really good mates. Mm-hmm. We, you know, we're dancing together. The nice thing is that we don't have partners that we're dancing with all the time. We switch partners around.
Yeah.
So we all get a feel for everybody else. And, but no, with Kev, I have a lot of respect for him, and I'm so proud for all the things that he's been doing lately. But no, for us, it's never been a problem, and it will never be a problem. Yeah, we're really cool.
That's very
lucky. It's like a new breed. It's a new breed. You know, most people think that we'd be like, oh, I don't like it. No, not at all. We laugh. We're, you know, it's all the things that we were always friends.
Yeah. No, that is nice. You know? That's true.
There's no drama. I don't like drama, baby llama. No, not at all. Not
that's
true.
A good
you know
phrase.
What?
I like that.
He's happy. I'm happy. It's all good. Let's be happy.
Yeah, I agree. And he's all good with Stacey?
I don't really know anything about that, because obviously when we go in, we're just really literally just going crazy. All the routines. We're doing about 3 to 17 routines a day.
Right, okay. So you're not sitting down and chatting.
You know what? If he looks extremely happy, so I'm happy that he's happy.
Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
All right, it is now an honour and a pleasure to welcome into the studio the wonderful Holly Cook. Welcome to the show, Holly.
Thank you so much.
You've had a very interesting career in terms of, you obviously started off working in the Slits, which is punk, then you did a dub album, and now your sort of reggae album. It seems like a lot of genre hopping. Do you think that that's been almost a hindrance, or has that been quite a useful thing for people not to be able to pin down where to place you?
Is it a hindrance? No, I don't think so. I think, if anything, it proves that you need not be boxed into one genre of music.
I was so tempted to press the applause then. That's a good answer.
People change, you know?
Of course,
That's okay. People grow and evolve. Also, at the same time, for whatever reason, punk and reggae are not
too
that
dissimilar.
Far away from each other.
I suppose ideology-wise, no, because it's on the outskirts of popular culture.
I got into reggae through being in the Slits and being a tiny punk.
A tiny punk. I like that, one. A tiny punk, yeah. Now, I'm sure you get asked this question all the time, but I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't document this properly with the correct question. Do you find that there's a bit of pressure because of your family lineage, i.e. your dad being in the Sex Pistols, of course? Or is that something that's never really crossed your mind? It's just something that media people like to just make a little story out of?
I will not flip the question, but I will ask you to further your question by asking me whether I feel pressure from myself, the media and outside world, or my Sex Pistol father.
I would say you're from your father.
From my father. Yeah. No, not at all. When I was younger, relatively high aspirations for me to be a doctor or a lawyer or something really reliable and high earning. But as soon as he realised that music was definitely like my core interest, which was literally from the age of about two, he said that I sang along to everything, and he just kind of knew that that was the case. And in a way,
singing along to the Sex Pistols at two years old, screaming.
He's done nothing but encourage that and be really cool about it. Let me do it.
Tom Latcham on FUBAR Radio.
It's FUBAR Radio in the house. This is the UK's home of uncensored, unregulated, ad-free radio, which is probably a good thing because my next two guests are inclined to swear. They are the Corrupt FM crew.
Fuck off. You prick.
That was the voice there of Steve's and MC Grinder, the stars of People Just Do Nothing, and also Garage MC DJ Pirate Radio legends now.
Exactly, taking over twice a week.
How are you, boys?
Yeah, well, I'm knackered, mate. You made me wake up at a stupid hour. I've been in a cab for 3 hours.
But you've come all the way from Brentford.
Exactly, yeah.
Cycled here on a little BMX that I found outside my nan's house.
He's perky because he's perked up from his cycle.
Obviously, you're like garage DJ and MC. And what sort of garage are you like? You know, you're playing modern stuff or you're playing like old stuff? Because I've got loads of old stuff basically lined up.
I like the old school. Only garages, real garages, is the old school stuff, really. Do you know what I mean? Like, not into this, house bollocks, do you know what I mean?
Well, there's Future Garage now, which is like the new garage sort of things, but Grindr says we can't play it on radio anyway. Yeah. Grindr's
strictly about the old school, do you know what I mean?
How long have you been DJing and MCing?
Well, I've only been MCing.
Steve's a DJ.
There's
two of you here.
Yeah, he's looking at me then.
The world doesn't revolve around you, Grindr.
Yeah, it does. You should know that.
So how long have you been DJing and MCing?
I've been MCing pretty much since I was born, I'd say.
Really?
Yeah, because I used to cry in rhythms. There's this wonderful little story, actually.
Oh, it's really lovely.
I love it when I tell the story.
Yeah. Tell
when I was 3 years old, I think I was about five. Yeah, I was 5 years old, my mum tells me. You know, them building blocks you get with the spelling, ABC and all that, yeah? She left me, she came back in, and I'd spelt cat and hat. I was 5 years old, I couldn't even speak
That's
yet.
Clever.
Couldn't
That's
even speak
amazing.
Yet.
Mind-blowing, isn't it?
In it. So, an MC from when I was born. Really, physically, probably since Classics first came out.
When did you first pick up a mic, then?
98.
That was just after Speed Garage, when sort of two-step was becoming a big thing.
Yeah, exactly, and then the dark side stuff started coming in, do you know what I mean? What about you?
I started DJing just a little bit after that, I suppose, when you said that you needed to use my uncle's decks. Yeah, we basically got the decks and then moved them into my nan's house eventually, and then we basically made my nan's house into Pirate Radio.
Yeah, exactly. And, so I made his life better.
It's a glamorous world, isn't it?
I dashed his nan out of the flat and shout out your nan then, isn't it?
Yeah, big up nan.
You're doing radio, but it's analogue radio, but really, that's not the future.
Real radio.
It is, that is the future, do you know what I mean? It's the future, present and the past, you know, them ones, back to the future.
Cycle of life.
Trust me, once this little internet fad blows over, you'll be fucked.
Yeah. So there's no plans then to go online?
Nah, because that ain't real radio, do you know what I mean?
It's like what Beats said,
there's
though.
There's no risk to it.
Beats is into this thing called Lacom. He's been telling me about Lacom.
Which is shampoo you put on your face.
And it makes you sort of stay young and soft.
Exactly.
So that's why Beats look so young and supple. I might try it out, yeah. Don't know how you get it. I'll speak
to
Beats.
And Steve's, when he buzzes out, when things smell really nice, you know, you get, the raspberry shampoos and that. We caught him trying to drink it.
I'll taste it, yeah, because I associate nice smell means you must be able to eat it.
Yeah.
But it's not the case.
Not.
I found out.
Then don't write that on the package.
I should just say we've been joined by Chibuddy G, who is also on the documentary People Just Like Us, who's not an MC or a DJ, sort of, business expert.
Entrepreneur.
Boys, can you do beatboxing? Because I've seen you've done a masterclass on YouTube of how to MC.
Yeah.
Can you beatbox?
Nah, I can't even beatbox, man. You're putting down on the spot, nah.
You should learn. You should take some hints and maybe learn. And Grace, do you think that you could do some garage and then Grindr could do some MCing over it?
Let's do it.
Sit up on the rhythm when I sit up on the rhythm. Sit up on the rhythm when I sit up on the rhythm. Sit up on the rhythm when I sit up on the rhythm.
Sit up on the rhythm when I'm on my cinema.
Monday is the day that we roll.
Tuesday,
we take total control.
Wednesday,
take back the track.
Thursday,
sit back, relax. Right, let's get down in my seat and go raving to the weather, I'll send G. Raving to the weather, I'll send G. With the mucker, call me MC Grindy. I'm like Grey Savage, the savage beast with the mouth. Killing it out here.
Crazy mouth skills.
Do some ad-lib, Shabby.
Shivani was just warming up to do a rap.
And then she stopped. I, by the way, did have a little rap to do, but then I basically bottled it. No, I'm not going to do it.
I can see your mouth twitching. Yeah, you were about to
do it. So what I was saying to you just before was, I grew up in Enfield. Shout out to all the Enfield crew. I used
very
to... So I grew up in Enfield and I was part of the Kingdom crew. Yeah, they were...
United Kingdom, I get it.
They were basically like Corrupt FM crew, but... less famous.
Not as good.
Throw your K's up.
I had one rap, but it wasn't very good, so I stopped doing it.
I feel like you have to do it now because you
just
said
it. I'm not going to do it. I bottled it. I'm afraid I bottled it.
D's. You left it right after the dip and just left it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm
right to the dip.
Showing you me tight balls as well while I do so. And so, what's it been like, the fame that's come with doing the documentary?
So I've always been famous just for being the best MC in West, do you know what I mean? So it ain't really a big deal to me, but like, Steve's, it's been a bit mad for you, innit?
It's been mad, yeah. I got a free T-shirt from Nike the other day.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was the wrong size, but it still is good for bed and...
Principle.
Too big or too small?
Tiny.
Oh, right.
Tiny.
A little crop top, Nike crop top.
But tell him what people in the street say to you, innit?
I just get people going, Steve's, you mess, get me in headlocks and like, sort of thing. And I'm like, ah, yeah, man, safe, thank you. Yeah, it's just mad. It's a mad world out there now.
It's called
like,
a prick, isn't it?
Yeah, just shouting at me.
Banter.
Banter.
It's all banter, isn't it?
What about you, Shabzy?
Oh, well, I actually think that, you know, like we're blowing up at the moment. I was on the train the other day, actually, and I had, my bag. I was going to see my mate. A guy came up to me on the train and was like, Shabzy, you're blowing up, mate. You're literally going to blow up.
Yeah.
And we were laughing. And everyone around us looked really nervous. I don't know what's going on. But
Jealous,
basically, because I'm blowing on a train. You know, chicks are looking at me. They're seeing the Gucci. They're seeing the facial hair, you know.
And Shivani, how come you came into the documentary? As far as I can see, you can't rap or DJ.
Well, I'm an entrepreneurial kind of guy. My skill is not for that kind of
music.
So how
did you become involved then?
We're from the same area, Hounslow, Brentford. And I'm the rig doctor. Whenever they have a problem, they call. I'm the guy that you can come and talk to whenever you need anything.
You sound, they're flat with egg boxes, didn't you?
I do a lot of their technical work. And I'm the guy that you come and see, you know, if you've maybe killed a brass or something, you need to get rid of that. Anything really, you know, I'm that guy. Bolt fishing, you call me up. You know, I'm in 10 minutes, I come in my van, so yeah, these are...
The Corrupt FM crew. What can we look forward to with you boys?
Yeah, catch us on BBC Three literally every hour, always on.
We are taking over BBC Three.
We're taking over.
So Corrupt FM and it rests irrelevant.
Ian Boldsworth on Free Bar Radio.
Coming up on the show today, we've got Stephen K. Amos.
Yes.
Hello, mate, you're right.
I'm all right, how are you?
I'm okay. I'm a bit tired today, but I'm all right.
Oh, good. As long as you're alive.
Well, even that, I'm not that fussed about. We've got a lad called Pete who's trying to organise a date, and he's just not going on it. He's on Tinder.
Yeah.
And he won't go on a date with this girl because she doesn't like Avengers, which I kind of understand in terms of that, if that's your reason. But...
Well, what's he throwing in the mix? He should make something, you know, put something else out there. Does he like the professionals?
Good point. And no, look at that. See, even Amos then just thought, oh, it means the Avengers from the olden days.
Yeah, that's exactly what I said. I think she's got confused. It's the wrong film she's thinking of.
Do you mean like...
Really? So what is she thinking of?
Marvel Avengers.
Yeah.
It's Marvel Avengers.
Oh, well, come on.
But that's what we're on. That's what he's on about as well. But we just suggested that it might be that she thinks it's the old Avengers from the olden days, which you just immediately thought.
Mm. I did, because, you know, I come from an era when all those programmes meant something.
Yeah.
No, Sapphire and Steel. Remember those?
No, not at all. I'm only 23.
I'm showing my age.
I've never heard it. I don't even know what you're on about, mate, with all the professionals and all that sort of thing.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks for that.
Yeah, never heard of it. Don't know what you're about. What Avengers? I don't even know what you mean. Where are you? Where in the world are you at the moment?
I'm actually sitting in my living room in South West London, having just watched another instalment of Loose Women and just wondering how loose they actually are.
Right.
And I'm just kind of not venturing out because I've heard all I've heard on the news today is that it's Blue Monday. Blue Monday.
Is it?
I'm thinking if I venture out, I will attack somebody.
What's Blue Monday?
It's the Monday of the New Year.
Oh, yeah, it is, isn't it? So it's the sad, it's the saddest day of the year.
Yeah, allegedly.
Well, I've not found that.
I'm so happy. I'm happy as Larry. Because when I was told on the news on a regular basis that it's Blue Monday, I'm now feeling a bit blue.
Well, stand up for yourself. Go on your Twitter or whatever. I don't know what social media you have. But go.
Oh, I do. I'm in the loop. Of course I'm in the loop. I've got Twitter. I've got Facebook. Right. I am there.
Well, get on there and say, come on, everyone.
I'm going to tell those people, have a laugh.
Just say you spoke to me today, and a bit skint, right? And I've got kidney stones, I've got to have an operation, which will mean that I've got to take time off doing comedy.
Well, you know what I'd do? I'd probably start off by saying you need the operation, as opposed to just popping in, he's a bit skint.
So don't say it, I should keep that quiet.
Yeah, I should keep that bit quiet, because, you know, we're all a bit skint. You know, we just had Christmas and New Year, all the sales.
Yeah,
it's Blue Monday, for heaven's sake.
I know, but you see, this is the... Did you sell loads of your stuff on eBay last week?
Do you know what? I did try and get rid of my unwanted Christmas gifts on eBay.
Did you really?
Oh, my God. My sister, I'm not even joking, blood relative, gave me a wrapped box. I looked in the box, and it contained a packet of assorted broken biscuits.
Amazing. That's a brilliant...
What that means,
what, you put that on eBay?
Yeah. Assorted biscuit. Broken biscuits. And why would you give that as a present to somebody?
I'd also ask, why would you put that on eBay? Did you get anything for it?
Well, we're currently at 12 pence. So there was no reserve.
Right.
I'm not proud.
Okay, well, 12's all right.
I can probably get something nice with that.
Is there any reference on your eBay that it's you?
Oh, my goodness, no. I've got to be very much on the down low. Can you imagine me saying,
totally.
I'm selling a few of my stuff?
I do that. I do that all the time, man. I honestly do that all the time. And by the way, it makes a difference. All you've got to deal with, though, so I'll say on Twitter or whatever, I'm selling shitloads of stuff on eBay. What you've got to deal with is loads of people saying, why, what's wrong, what's wrong? And you're like, nothing's wrong. I'm just selling my stuff. I've just got a full house. That's all it is. I'm doing a car boot sale, but I don't leave the house.
And what's the most you raise, then, and for what?
What's most I've raised?
Yeah.
I'll tell you, it's a bit gauchless to say, but I'll tell you exactly. Between December and January, I did $2,000.
What?
Yep.
That's a business opportunity right there.
Well, do you know, and I've spent it. I spent it on the show last week. I needed a new computer, and I wanted a PS4. I didn't need it. I wanted it. So I looked around my house, and I thought, I don't want that anymore. I don't need that anymore. I went through drawers. I don't need this anymore. This is just taking up space. My place isn't that big, really. It's bigger than a studio flat, but it's still a flat. And I thought, I just want to clear this fucking place. And also, I had a lot of stuff as well that had emotional attachment to me that I didn't want anymore. So I had a lot of stuff that, when I looked at it, it made me sad because somebody else had given it to me, and I'm no longer friends with that person. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. So...
You're no longer friends with that person, and you're very sad about it. I'm going to sell their shit.
No, it's not their shit. It's stuff that they bought me. So it's like I had beautiful stuff that I couldn't look at anymore because I'd well up.
Well, okay.
Do you know what I mean? So it's not stuff that I've always been not always, but in recent years, I've always thought, chuck that stuff out. That's anything that has sadness attached to it, just get rid of it.
I'm with you on that one. I'm with you because my parents are at an age now where they just hoard stuff.
Yeah.
It's just like, it's not even useful stuff. My dad's like going, oh, one day this will be back in trend. What, a wooden intercom system. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's never coming back.
And you can say to them, and look, that stylophone is never coming back now. That is tarnished forever. The stylophone has got to go.
It's just like, and look at the stylophone. It's got Rolf Harris's picture on it.
Yeah, totally,
it's not
totally.
Coming back.
My grandparents on my dad's side, my nan and granddad, they had a stylophone. Honestly, you wouldn't believe the state of it. I used to quite like it as a kid, but they had it in a cupboard. It was glued together. It had been so knackered. The battery was hanging out of it with sparks coming off it. And it was like, can I play with a stylophone? I'm surprised I didn't die. I'm surprised that I survived through that.
But yeah. I mean, this is my childhood we're talking about. Stylophones, scalectrics, all that kind of rubbish. But I don't have any of those stuff to sell on eBay. The only things I've got in my house are things I actually need and want.
Right,
my friends, who I don't talk to anymore, who've given me stuff, I've burnt.
I get that.
I missed the trick.
Do you know what? No, but I get that, because I think there's something quite cathartic about that as well. That was, I've been talking about things that I've wrote today, and I once wrote a short story called The Day I Burnt Your Stuff. which was about, which is something that I genuinely did, that I went and burnt somebody's stuff that they'd left in my house. And it's quite, that's quite cathartic as well. But then if you think, all right, well, I can get $2,000 out of this, then...
That's why you've got the business acumen, because I didn't even think of that.
I reckon so, mate. Well,
no, I've got stuff that people have asked me to hold on to, and they've not picked it up for a couple of years. I think I could sell that.
Oh, I've got a box of Raji James's stuff. Do you know Raji James?
Yeah.
I've got a box of his stuff. I found it the other night. It was on EastEnders. Do you know what I found the other night? I found two things the other night that I thought, these are genuine collector's items for someone somewhere. I found his nameplate when he was on Blankety Blank. So the nameplate that was on front of him when he's on Blankety Blank, I found that. And I found his nameplate, which I reckon I'd probably get for scrap. I'd get quite a bit on scrap. Like a bronze nameplate, which is the Albert Square sign with Roger James written through the middle of it.
You could sell
which
that.
Is what that's what they have on their
Don't
doors. No, I could sell that if it said Leslie Grantham on it.
Oh, yeah, true.
But I can't sell it when it says fucking Raji James on it, can I not?
I've got two plaques I'm actually staring at in my house. Right. When you do the Hammers of Apollo, they give you a plaque to commemorate the date, whatever. I'm thinking they could go.
Yeah, they totally could. If you don't want them, they could go.
Or, but can you imagine the horror if I put them on eBay and they don't go for much? I'll be devastated.
I sold a Deal or No Deal t-shirt on eBay once. Because I worked on Deal or No Deal as a warm-up for a bit, and I had a bad experience there. They sacked me ultimately. It was hilarious. But
you're joking.
On the day that they sacked, the day before they sacked me, they'd given me a T-shirt, like a crew T-shirt, and it was a really nice shirt. It was all embroidered, it had a box embroidered on the chest, and it had Deal or No Deal written across the arse of it, all embroidered. It was a really nice shirt. Mm. And I kept that for a while, and then I sold it on eBay. I got about 80 quid for it.
80?
Yeah, yeah.
And did you Deal or No Deal?
Took it, mate. Snatched his fucking hand off, mate. But there's another thing in my house at the moment that I'm considering selling, which was I did the first and third series of Miranda.
Okay.
Right. Now, I got sacked off the third series of Miranda.
What?
At the very, very end of it. It wasn't Miranda. Me and Miranda are still friends. It wasn't her. It was behind-the-scenes stuff. So I've no bad blood with Miranda at all, and nor has she with me. And she recently asked me to do the specials, and I couldn't do them because I was doing something else. So it was all cleared up, and she was like, no, I want you back for this, and I couldn't do it. But there's no bad blood at all between me and Miranda. But in series one of Miranda, they gave me a gift at the end of it, which was a mug with a picture of Miranda on the side of it. It just says, my what I call Miranda mug, right?
Right.
And it's something I'm never going to use. It's something that I'm not that bothered about keeping. But I still feel quite bad the idea of selling it. I've still not sold it.
Right.
But its card is marked.
Well, I reckon what you should do is you should, when you meet up with Miranda, because you're obviously good friends still,
I wouldn't
the mug, pretending you're going to keep it, then sell it.
Right. And I don't think she'll be on eBay checking.
She won't be on eBay checking. And also what you kind of glossed over is the fact that you've just told me within 5 minutes that you were the warm-up for two very popular TV shows and got sacked.
Hmm. Yeah.
What does that say about you?
Well, no, what does it say about you? Because I was the warm-up on your show and I wasn't sacked. So what does that say about you?
I'm a nice person.
About your quality control on your show.
The Jack Mate Show on FUBAR Radio.
Kian Toomey, the Facebook legend. I should have done my research and worked out exactly how many million
about
views.
3 million,
I'm sure he knows.
3 million
oh, views. Sorry, I mean followers on Facebook.
4 million.
Yeah.
We'll ask him. I'm sure he knows.
Multi-million views.
He? I'm so happy that you pronounced my surname right.
Oh, I had to tell him all this morning, mate. Usually I get it wrong.
Toomey. So many people call it Toomey. It's Toomey.
Kian Toomey.
Hi, guys. How are you?
I'm good, mate.
We're well. How are you?
Fantastic.
What has been the one moment since Facebook's taken off where you thought, like, oh, fuck me, this is big time?
Did a pun video. I was walking around the shop with my girlfriend, the real Emily. And I was just doing stupid puns, and that got on, like, Ellen DeGeneres got on MTV. It got on, like, the biggest things. I was stuck on 195,000 followers for 6 months, right? Mm. Did that video, and then I think I got, like, 200,000 followers in 2 days.
Really?
Yeah, then it just started taking off, and that was it, really. That was kind of the point where I knew that I should just really stick at doing stupid girlfriend stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Gee willikers.
I genuinely thought you said porn video when you said pun video. I thought you said porn video. I was like, that is big. Or
in
not.
A, in that, a that's shop. The 4 million special, so.
Oh, okay. So get following, guys, if you want to see that. It says here, is Emily really that pathetic? I think Tom wrote that one.
Define pathetic.
Because she's quite whingy, quite annoying, and...
No, okay, she's not whingy annoying. Your portrayal of her...
That's what I'm talking
about.
Yeah,
but it sounds like you're digging her out.
Tom, I don't know Emily personally. I'm talking about Kian's portrayal of Emily.
Okay.
We'll start with the real Emily, right? No, we'll start with the portrayal, like, the character.
Okay.
She's a psycho little bitch. She's not that bad in real life, right? But she's still fairly bad, you know?
If I did this to my girlfriend, that would be doors, I think. She'd be like, wouldn't have none of that.
Really?
Yeah, but I guess Emily can't say anything because she's like, look, I've got 3 million people loving this shit.
This shit.
Not shit as in shit, as in, oh, you make this.
It's the complete opposite, the real one, though. She has this little notepad. It's kind of sad, but it's cute at the same time, where she kind of writes video ideas for me.
Oh.
And I'll have like a flick through them every few days, and the odd time I get like a really good one, I do that. So I'm doing one out tonight that was her idea. So
that's awesome.
She's supportive, which is cool. You
know? Well done, real Emily, on being supportive.
Job,
yeah,
really,
yeah, we'll all clap for that. Yeah. Will, do you want to clap? Or,
I'm clapping.
What's the dream then, mate?
The end goal.
Yeah.
I don't know. I want to get into acting. I'd love to be in like a proper movie, like a proper feature length film. Like, eventually, you know, the whole internet shit's going to die out, like, let's be honest.
I hope not. Kind of relying on that.
You know, I don't want to get to the stage where making videos isn't going to satisfy me anymore. It's not going to be. So I kind of want to move on to something really challenging, like film. Like, I'd love to do film. It'd be cool to see myself in a movie, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Going more towards the beard. Will that ever go?
See, the problem is, right, it's an awful beard, yeah? If I shave it, I look like either a 12-year-old, I look like a thumb, or... I just look stupid, so I've settled with the beard and just dealt with it, you know? There's people that watch my videos, like, a lot, right, and say my mother is an example. And my mother be watching the videos, and, like, there's some parts where she'd literally forget that I'm the same person.
Stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.